DW Spectrum with Connor Dillon and Gabriel Borrowed.
Hello and welcome to Spectrum. My name is Connor Dillon.
And my name is Gabriel Borrowed. We have an interesting show.
Gabe.
What?
Let's get out of here.
Go where? Let's do the show.
No. Let's get out of the studio. Let's leave DW. Let's go to the movies.
The movies?
Yeah.
Catch a flick?
Catch a film. We'll do the show from inside the movie theater.
What film?
I've been wanting to see this German production. It's called Woof.
Is that the dog movie?
It's the dog movie. Let's go.
All right. I'm coming.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Can we have one jumbo popcorn, like the biggest popcorn that you have?
Sweet or salty?
Definitely extra butter. Salty.
And a large cola drink as well.
1 liter or 1.5?
1.5.
Okay.
Thank you.
1.5 liter? I have never seen a cup that fat.
Forcing you to use the restroom right in the middle of the film.
I'm going to miss the best part of Woof.
Okay, so you can hear some music in the background.
And a lot of dogs barking. Because this movie is called Woof.
Yeah, Gabe and I are sitting in an empty movie theater in Bonn. This is the Kinopolis.
Private screening.
Private screening of a German film called Woof. And Gabe, this isn't just a Thursday afternoon date for us, is it?
No, we're not holding hands yet. But hold on, Connor. This is Spectrum.
Yeah.
A science show.
Yeah. We're doing science.
What are we doing at the movie theater?
We're watching a movie about dogs. That's science, I think. No, the reason we're here, it's related to a study that was just published by the Max Planck Institute for Chemistry down in the German city of Mainz. And what they've been doing down there, what a couple of researchers down there have been doing, is they've been analyzing the air that comes out of movie theaters like this one. So right now there's not going to be much air coming out because it's just you and me, Gabe. And I know you blow a lot of hot air.
Yeah.
But in a packed cinema, you typically have, I think we were just told that this...
There are 73 seats here.
73 seats. So you'd have 73 human beings worth of air coming out.
Yep.
Now,
So they're looking at what they're exiting. Oh, the movie's starting. Hold on.
Movie's starting. Okay, a couple of people sitting down in red chairs. And it looks like they're getting...
They're talking. This is really exciting.
They are talking. See, now, you say that kind of sarcastically because...
That was a bit sarcastic.
Because it's not very exciting right now. But in fact, our bodies are responding to the dramatic stimuli here. We are watching this movie, and we're not passive, you know, blocks of cement. We're actually reacting.
No, yeah, the vicarious experience sets off... A lot of chemical reactions in the body.
Exactly. Now, again, the Max Planck Institute for Chemistry, what they've done is they've set up basically a vacuum cleaner on the air ducts of a cinema down in Mainz. And
how did they do that?
Well, let's allow the leader of that research project to explain it himself. His name is Jonathan Williams. And one thing that I have to say before we start...
So instead of the air vent, there was a vacuum cleaner there? Just sucking the air in?
Basically, yeah. Sucking the air out.
Sucking the air out of the theater.
Yeah.
And then just checking it out and analyzing
exactly.
It.
Exactly. So we're going to let Jonathan Williams tell us a bit about that particular experiment. Now, before we go to him... What I need to make clear is Jonathan Williams is nowhere near Germany right now. His newest research findings were just published. I got in contact with him, and he said to me, "Hey, look, I'd love to talk to you. It's a bit complicated because I'm in the Amazon jungle
what?
Right now."
In the jungle?
Yeah, in the Amazon jungle. And we will later talk about why he's there and what he's doing there. But
all right, let's get to the jungle.
Yeah, just a word to the listener. It's about to sound very jungle-like as we go to Jonathan Williams in the Amazon.
And what we've done is we've taken very sensitive chemical apparatus to the cinema and measured the chemicals that are emitted by people as they're watching films. And we've assembled an enormous database of films and people's reactions. And so what we did was we have constructed a model based on our chemical measurements and the known ratings of the films so far, And we found that some of our chemicals are able to predict the age classification of the film rather well. And the best chemical that we found in this capacity was the molecule isoprene. It contains 5 carbons, it's reactive, and it's emitted on our breath. Now, what we think is going on here is that isoprene is made in the body by a sort of metabolic process, and it's stored in muscles, in muscle tissue, in your legs and your arms. And the less comfortable you feel, the more you squirm and jump about in your seat in the cinema, the more short duration pulses of isoprene appear in our signals. And so higher the variability in the isoprene signal, higher, we say, should be the age classification of the film.
Okay, so straight from the Amazon to Wolf.
To Wolf.
The Kinopolis here in Bonn, Bad Godesberg. This film is not exciting yet.
No, not yet.
Wolf, not yet. So as soon as it does get exciting, I'm going to be breathing out isoprene. Some kind of organic compound?
Yes.
Look at that. Oh, yeah, right there.
Oh, my. Well, and maybe if we'd been watching more. Look, there's a huge, I think, St. Bernard dog that just tackled
one of
the
characters. Jumped on this guy and just came out of nowhere.
So that might.
So I squirmed a bit there.
And that might have caused an isoprene spike.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not just you. They would have seen that the 73 other people sitting here probably would have had similar reactions.
So we all do the same thing no matter what?
I'm
Are we
sure
like chemical robots then or something?
I'm sure there are variations, but on some level, as he was saying, it has to do with movement. And that led to my next question for him, because he... Oh,
whoa, that's a big Mercedes.
German automobile just roaring. And again, we're reacting to this. But Jonathan Williams talks about, in his study, he talks about emotional stress. Or I'm sorry, emotional tension is actually the word that he uses.
Emotional tension.
Emotional tension, and that's what releases this chemical. One question I had for him though is how can you differentiate these different kinds of movement? What if it's not emotional stress that's releasing isoprene? What if we're watching a really, really funny movie, a comedy, and I'm laughing, I'm doubled over, I can hardly catch my breath.
Yeah.
You know,
it's more of a release than a tension there.
Yeah, right? and that's not stress, that's not emotional tension. So how can you measure the difference? Here's what Jonathan had to say.
Back to the rainforest.
In our first study, we measured hundreds of films and monitored the chemical composition of the cinema changing during all of these films. And some of the films were horror films, some of them were children's films, some of them were action-adventure films. And after they were all recorded, we went through all of the films and labelled each scene for the type of activity that was going on the screen. So if there were sort of moments of tension, or if there was crying, or kissing, or fighting, we simply put that label on the film. And then we used quite advanced data mining techniques to look to see if there were any linkages between those emotional labels we put on and any of the hundreds of volatile organic compounds that we had measured in parallel. And what we found was the labels with the best linkages to chemicals in the air were, in fact, the labels related to tension, so hiding labels, running labels, and also comedy labels. So those two types, if you like, the tension and the comedy, were the labels that were best linked to chemicals measured by our mass spectrometer. Now, unfortunately, the chemicals which were linked to those emotions that we picked as labels were chemicals that we were not familiar with. They're not chemicals that we measure every day in the outside air. And so we didn't really know their true identity. We had their mass, because we measure with a mass spectrometer. We didn't know their true identity. But if you look back now at the data and look at isoprene, so this is a molecule which is in our breath at quite high concentration, and look at how it varies, indeed you see whenever are the sort of moments of high tension, particularly fight scenes where the hero or heroine is battling for their life, there you do see peaks in isoprene, really time-stamping exactly the moments in the film where these things occur. And in horror films, where people are regularly jumping up and down out of their seat, you also see them. You see these multiple variations of isoprene. But strangely enough, in the comedy scenes, much less so, much more damped. We measured a comedy film, Walter Mitty, and there wasn't so much variation at all, hardly any peaks visible. So I can only imagine that the isoprene ventilation rate, and this is an answer inspired by your question, is indeed much higher when you're under tension and your muscles are tense while you're watching the film. But that's something that we'll need to investigate in the future. That's a very good question.
Oh, you hear that door slam?
Yeah, he just ran out on her and slammed the door.
And this woman, this character, this female character is upset now. So I would say maybe a little emotional tension here. That's what the paper's talking about, right?
Okay. I mean, if I were really into this, which I'll be honest, I'm not yet.
Not yet.
But if I were really feeling it, she's okay.
She's eating a rice
cake. She's eating a rice cake.
Yeah.
Okay, that was some frustration.
Now we're switching scenes. This is calming me down. So again, according to the paper, our isoprene levels right now should be low.
And yeah.
We're not experiencing emotional tension, no stress. And by the way, one interesting point, I asked Jonathan Williams, I said, hey, how can you know, usually when you talk about tension or stress, you hear cortisol mentioned. And he said, well, cortisol is only measurable by swabbing your cheek, or that's one of the most common ways of measuring it.
And you couldn't do that with 73 people sitting here.
No, you'd mess up the experiment. Everyone would say, what's this guy interrupting my film for, swabbing my cheek? Get out of here. And so cortisol is not part of this, but isoprene is. And again, it's probably pretty low right now. But that makes sense, because
she's crying again.
Oh, she is crying again. Put the sunglasses on to hide it, but he already saw her crying, so I'm not
sorry to interrupt you. I just
I'm not sure that's gonna.
Oh, a dog.
Oh,
we
I got
a dog.
I get it. So she's upset. And she needs a dog to make her feel better. That's where this is going.
Oh.
Okay. So again, very
emotional rescue.
Very low emotional tension, but that makes sense because when we were led into this film, one thing I asked beforehand is what kind of movie rating did this film get?
This is rated G.
Rated G.
A dog could come in here and watch this movie.
A dog might actually be allowed, now that I think about it. So the point is...
Uh-oh.
Motorcycle scene. Oh, and the dog's gone now.
The dog jumped out of the convertible. She lost the dog.
She's turning around, emotional tensions through the roof.
I am tense.
Okay,
right now.
Now we're calming down. So their argument is... You could drop the ratings and just do it based on isoprene. And my question for him was, does he really, truly support that idea? Like a future, I mean, imagine, they're basically saying that in the future, you might go to see a movie, you could go to see a movie and it'd be like rated 88 on the isoprene level. Oh no, this movie's rated 23 on the isoprene level. That means anyone can go see it.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what Jonathan Williams had to say about that.
Ah, maybe. Maybe in the future we'll have labels on films with, instead of 12 or 6 or R-rated or classified, instead maybe we have the average CO2 emission rate for the film or the variability of isoprene. I'm not really sure that the public are ready for this level of detailed information on a particular film. Although it might be fun to see if different filmmakers could compete with each other to scare more isoprene or CO2 out of public. It'd be an interesting metric to use about the level of horror in a film or the level of how a film makes you uncomfortable or puts you on edge. It'd be interesting to explore these ideas. It's all very fresh and new.
Okay, so they're in the forest. The dog ran away. She went after it into the forest, and this dude, this hunter,
dressed in camouflage.
He's dressed in camouflage, kind of spooky. Found the dog for her,
and then brought it back to her while she was crying on a stump. I don't know.
She was crying, and he just kind of like
he found her,
came up on her. How did he know that she was looking for the dog?
Maybe the dog found her.
Maybe the dog found her.
So much is coming together. How's your emotional tension?
It's like zero right now.
Well, no, that fits the rating. So even
Wait a minute. Why do we go to the movies?
Why
to feel tense.
Yeah, to feel something, right?
To feel tense, and then at the end of the film, it gets sort of relieved or mollified.
And there's some sort of
released or
middle ground, right? On this would be the extreme on one end, where you feel very little emotional tension, and on the other would be, let's say, a horror film that would make you literally jump out of your seat and would kind of haunt you as you try to go to sleep that
night.
There's
a lot of conflict here. The dogs are fighting. Their masters are fighting. Wait a minute. So what's going on here in terms of... Let's take it to its logical conclusion. If this is right, then movies are going to turn into vehicles for isoprene emission.
Well, that's what Jonathan Williams was kind of implying. You could have
the person who can best manipulate
movie directors.
Isoprene. They're going to be the king director.
No, Steven Spielberg would be like, hey, I got him up to 96.
I'm at 98 on the isoprene scale, yo.
And Night Shyamalan coming in with a 97.
Quentin Tarantino comes in, 100! Oh, yeah!
No, yeah, and it sounds funny, but in
That's
a way...
That's kind of scary.
In a way, though, I would argue that directors are already doing just that.
Without it being quantified.
Without being able to measure the chemical compounds.
Yeah.
So, one critique...
Right, hold on. Let me just get this out. This is a video on YouTube by Rebecca Watson, who picked up this study and was wondering about the objectivity of it. Let me just play this quick.
More isoprene than a movie that is rated PG. They use that information to create a model that might be able to categorize the movies accurately based upon isoprene levels. The researchers say that this will improve the movie rating system since currently it is subjective, whereas this is objective, a measurement that you can't actually argue with. That's the point when reading this that I pretty much just lost it. So let's talk about what's wrong with the study. First of all, they didn't go into this with the hypothesis that isoprene would correlate to movie ratings. They used the mass spectrometer not just to test isoprene, but to test more than 60 different compounds, all of which are things that humans release. And then they picked out the one that most closely showed what they were looking for. This is something I've talked about in previous videos. It's something called p-hacking. It should only be used in preliminary studies, if at all. And that's exactly what this is. This is a preliminary study. Because when you're looking at more than 60 different compounds, you have a pretty good chance of finding one that does what you want it to do just by random chance.
Okay, so that was Rebecca Watson there speaking on YouTube on a video, should scary movies be rated by the compounds they make humans emit? She's kind of hard on him there. I mean, they collected a bunch of data and found that isoprene levels correlate with a certain kind of movie. Right? Or certain scenes, certain moments in that movie. Right? They weren't looking for one combo. I mean, they just did it and that's what they saw.
Sure, right? Sure. I mean, I think if I can kind of paraphrase what she's saying it's a good first step, but it shouldn't be taken as the final word on, you know, how to rate movies. But on the other hand, I actually tend to look at this the opposite way, which is...
We got one dog licking the other dog right now, by the way. Keep going.
Not doing much for me.
Okay.
Oh, no, I think they're about... Yeah, they're about to...
It's dog licking.
Are they about to mate?
I'm sorry for interrupting you. Just keep...
But I guess my take is this seems to me to be very objective in the sense that the researchers didn't go in looking for a specific outcome. They went in looking to measure the chemicals.
Just to see what happens.
Just to see what happens. Kind of like an epidemiological study where you vacuum up tons of data.
Yeah.
And then just look for correlations or connections. Now, you're not saying it's one is causing the other, but things jump out at you and you say, well, that's weird. Mm-hmm. We weren't looking for that, but that's how it ended up.
Yeah.
So fair point. Maybe there's further research to be done.
We're just assuming that John Williams and his team weren't after isoprene.
Right.
That's fair enough to assume, I think, right?
Right.
Because they were measuring, like Rebecca Watson said, they were measuring 60 different compounds just to see where the correlations were.
Oh, smell some hot dogs, smell some
He's
German,
going after
German,
it.
Some
he's going
German,
after.
German bratwurst.
He's going after the Wurst.
Oh, he's going in. Now, one problem that I potentially foresaw with all of this, one ethical problem, and actually this came from our colleague Carla Bleicher pointed this out, was there's a sort of chicken and the egg problem here. If you have a film that children shouldn't be watching because they're going to emit too much isoprene when they watch it, they're going to freak out.
Yeah.
How can you know that? Because in order to know that, you have to measure them first. You have to put them in front of, let's say,
Well, that's the thing. I mean, before the rating is made, you have to show this movie to, what, a test group?
Exactly, exactly.
300 people?
Which works, which to me is a great idea. I mean, you already have the movie ratings people watching films in advance.
They've watched the movie. Do they get together and talk about it, or do they vote anonymously? I mean,
I think every country would have a different way of doing it,
right.
To be honest. But with kids, that was the big issue. How, you can't screen terrifying movies to children, so how do you measure them? And Jonathan had a very interesting answer to that one.
Back to the rainforest.
Very clearly that's not acceptable and would not be done at all. And the nice thing is that our model actually works without children. There is quite a degree of complexity here. We know already from other people's research that children do emit less isoprene than adults. Okay, so up until the age of 12 or so, children tend to emit very little isoprene on average. But what we found was that when we measured films which were rated zero, that means open to everyone, but were only populated by adults, we also were able to predict the age classification of the film. We were not relying on a certain proportion of children in the audience. Okay? That is to say, within our data set, we had films that were rated zero or unclassified, and in some of those films, just because of the content, only adults went to watch them. So there was one about a pilgrimage of a German comedian, and children were not interested in this, so only adults went to it. But it had nothing harmful in its content, so it was given the rating zero. And in other films, dinosaur films and things, there was a mixture of adults and children. And in both cases, the model did work based on the variability of isoprene, not the absolute amount. The model was able to, with reasonable degrees of success, predict the age rating of the film. And when I say reasonable degrees of success, of course, it wasn't perfect, but who's to say that the subjective judgment of the census was perfect? Are they always consistent? Or are objective measurements highlighting perhaps where slight inconsistencies are?
So one of the main characters now in this movie is talking to a doctor.
He's just been diagnosed with cancer.
Something down in his intestines? Intestinal tract?
Yeah.
And this new plot twist occurred after a dog began...
A dog rolled up to him and barked really loud. And he goes, "What's wrong with the dog?" And then... the female character goes, "Maybe there's something wrong with you. Dogs can smell when you're sick."
Which is
that
true.
That literally just happened.
Which is true. And I know that dogs can smell when you have the measles or other sort of viral infections, I guess. But yeah, this kind of ties back to...
That's exactly what's going on in that theater in Mainz, right? They're smelling...
air. Yeah, they're smelling air just like this dog was smelling its owner, I guess. And that's something that...
To see how we react to certain moments, certain...
That Jonathan Williams wanted to kind of stress and wanted to highlight that...
Emotional states in the film.
That if there's one really big conclusion or sort of finding or thought to be drawn from the experiment with the movie theater, I mean, of course, it's great to have an objective system of movie ratings and to be able to say, oh, it's an 89 on the isoprene scale. But even larger than that is the idea of medicinal... breath analysis, or relatively young field, and that where people, you know, go into hospitals, have their breath analyzed for things like cancer or
making it easier to screen for,
yeah.
For,
yeah, yeah.
For disease.
No, and things like cancer, liver disease, etc. And what this study has shown is how much our emotional state can influence.
And how precisely we can analyze that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. In this reaction vessel.
Yeah.
How much our emotional state can influence what gets breathed out. So even if you're going to the doctor's office, going to the hospital, and having a medicinal breath analysis, it might change if you're feeling upset, or if you've just almost gotten hit by a bus, or if you are feeling ecstatic because the sun is shining.
Yeah. Is the dog speaking?
What? Is the dog talking to
her? The dog's talking to her.
That's it. That's a late change. I mean, usually the animals either talk the whole movie or they don't. And suddenly,
yeah, why wait until...
the 89th minute?
To introduce that one.
Although I suppose it's in her head, it's maybe a reflection of her psychological state.
There were a
few
other times where there's kind of sort of people envisioning things that aren't real.
Yeah.
Hypothetical moments, but that was a dog talking. It seems like this movie is sort of wrapping up, but I don't really know what's happened yet.
Yeah, and I'm not sure we ever really settled that question, did we?
This is a tough movie.
Yeah, I would compare it to
a lot of the...
Love Actually, where you have a lot of intertwined love stories and coincidental happenings.
Very fun day out at the movies, Connor. Again, still we're back in the studio. What?
Yeah.
First of all, what in the world was John Williams doing in the rainforest?
So my research group at the Max Planck Institute for Chemistry in Mainz is focused on the measurement of volatile organic compounds, sometimes called VOC. Normally, we measure them in outside air. This is because volatile organic compounds are important for the production of ozone in the atmosphere and also particles. Now, both ozone and particles have an impact on human health, but they also impact the health of the atmosphere. They influence how the atmosphere absorbs light from the sun, and also how the chemical cleaning mechanisms in the atmosphere work. And it's for that reason that we travel around the world measuring these compounds. Now, globally seen, the most important place, or the biggest emissions on the planet of these volatile organic compounds, occur in the tropical forests. And that is why, right now, I am standing deep in the Amazon rainforest. Now, right next to me is a very tall tower. It's 325 meters tall, and we are measuring our volatile organic compounds at various heights on this tower 24 hours a day. And what we see is that as the sun rises and the plants and the vegetation, the trees all start to photosynthesize, lots of VOCs, and I mean hundreds of thousands of reactive chemicals, are released into the Earth's atmosphere by the plants. Now, in the atmosphere, there are various oxidation agents, and these serve to clean the atmosphere. After all, we know that the whole atmosphere doesn't smell of forest, so there must be some sort of cleaning process at work. And one of those cleaning agents is ozone, another is the OH radical, and essentially they do battle against this army of reactive volatile organic compounds coming from below. And by measuring at various different heights on our tower, we can see various states of the battle, if you like. And what results is a sort of chemical carnage, if you like, as the chemistry gets going and the cleaning agents of the atmosphere essentially do battle with all the hundreds of reactive emissions from the forest. And it's that chemistry that we're focused on here. We're trying to understand how efficient it is, what products it makes, and how these reactions impact the global atmosphere.
Wow, from a movie theater to the world.
To chemical carnage.
What a living chemist.
In the atmosphere.
Jonathan Williams, awesome stuff, Connor.
Well, that's it for this week's show. A very special thanks to Jonathan Williams and his team from somewhere in the Amazon jungle.
And thanks to Friederike Gruna at the Kinopolis Movie Theater in Bonn-Bettelsberg.
Also to the DMC Film Distributor in Berlin, Germany.
And here in Bonn, in our studio, Leon Becker, our sound engineer, and Christoph Groove.
And most importantly, to all of our listeners out there who followed us on this cinematic journey through isoprene and medicinal breath analysis all the way up into the atmosphere. It was a fun, wild journey. If you have any questions or comments or suggestions or random scientific insights about this show or about anything else, please send them our way. We read these emails. We are spectrum@dw.com. If you are looking for even more DW science, stuff that couldn't be fit into the show, check us out online. We're dw.com/science. We're also on social media. We're on Facebook at DW Science and on Twitter at DW_SciTech. That is it from me, Connor Dillon, and Gabriel Borud here in Bonn. on behalf of all of my SciTech colleagues here at Deutsche Welle, have a wonderful week ahead.